Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SMB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Joshua Reminer had to join us. We have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.talkshow.com. A search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is Franz Games, FranzGames. Of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is Paul Franz. That's PaulFranz. And if to find me there, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. And of course, I have a secondary account called Franz Games where I announce this podcast, different news, and also client updates. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. They were recovering from the plague, i.e. the flu. And Jean got a new computer. She spent a lot of time playing with it and recovering her various passwords. That's always fun. Reason why she had to recover various passwords because she didn't back them up or something along those lines. Or most people who logs into a website and then never logs out. To me, that's not good. But moving forward, Steve Cole continued to recover from the flu and spent time working with the Shapeway sculptors, which is always cool to hear. And then, of course, Steve Pitchick was working on, he's been working on for a while now, which is the Zinti and Gorn Master Starship books. Yes, they are coming soon to a website near you. And Jean, of course, was busy, well, recovering from the flu, setting up her new computer, and, of course, managing to keep the spam assault on the BBS down to a bare roar, and, of course, keeping things going when it comes to the Shapeways. Miniatures and all those things related to that. When it comes to SMB Online tournaments, we got the final set for Rad 47, but we don't have a game. Guys, come on, Clayton, Paul, let's get going, man. Let's get this thing done. You are the last game. I know you guys are afraid of losing, but it's like, you've gotten this far, you're not afraid of losing. Moving forward to the Platinum Hat Tournament. And, of course, we actually have no progress shown. Doesn't mean people haven't been playing games. Just that people, no one's won a game yet or lost a game yet. Well, same thing. You can't tie. not a Platinum Hat. And, of course, that means that there are 3 games still need to be played in round 1. And round 2, there are 4 games already complete. And actually, well, 4 games to play. Wow. That's just right there in the middle. Of course, when it comes to the library, we're still stuck at the same old, same old. Come on, guys. We want to get this thing done by the end of the year. At least that's my goal. We're at 71%, and I want to get to, at the very least, 95%. I'm certain for 100% here, guys. But if we... Now, I understand that part of that issue might be Steve Cole, but, you know, i.e. getting the background images from him, but let's see if we can at least get it. So the only thing we're waiting for is Steve Cole. Okay? And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me. It's the one, the only, the Paul Franz welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we got me, and we got the chat room with MG Lawson, Dave, and Russ, which is always good to see. The more the merrier. If you have some time on Thursday nights, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, drop in. You know, at the very least, maybe you can listen to my ramblings for a bit. Of course, if you're hearing this now, you probably heard some of my ramblings in recorded fashion. Tonight, I was going to start off with Shapeways and some not all some ideas I have about Shapeways and so forth. But what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to switch it up. What I actually want to talk about first is a little piece that I found written by our friend Gary Carney, posted on the discussion board just today. And actually, I'm going to just quickly breeze through this thing. Because what it is he talks about mind layers and mind sweepers when it comes to the Omega's octant. Now, basically, he's mentioned like for the most of the metal hull, quote unquote, metal hull, Omega Empires, i.e. non-organic. The question is relatively straightforward. If one were to develop a minesweeper and or mine layer variants, how similar or not would this process be relative to what is known by the Alpha and the LMC warfare units? And it goes through multiple iterations on this. Now, some of these things he brings up, like Iridani, he says, and indeed, would the very concept of Iridani mind warfare be a post-Andromeda innovation or something that were not minded, that they weren't not minded to bother with until during or after the Grand Quest? And one thing that I'm just going to comment on when it comes to that is I would think that for the Iridani, the whole concept of mind warfare, they picture themselves as these knights who go on these quests. And I can't imagine them going on a quest to put up a minefield. I don't know. Just can't imagine that myself. I can easily see that happening as a post-Andromedan innovation. In that, after they see how they can be actually invaded and come under an issue, a real problem, they realize, you know what? We need some way to protect ourselves. So that laying an actual minefield and basically a whole lot of concept of building up a wall, a castle wall, where you're going to protect the inhabitants inside that wall. And that's the whole idea. I can see that being actually a quest. In that case, them see that, we need a quest to lay down this minefield as quickly as possible and to protect our kingdom. I can see that. To me, that's no issue whatsoever. But definitely, I see it as a post-Andromeda. Not until they actually faced that. Now, obviously, I don't know as much history, Omega history, as Gary does. Now, which is one thing that I actually just mentioned just a little earlier, which is I really need to freshen myself up when it comes to the Omega history. Get out the modules and read through the history of the Omega. And one thing also mentioned here is that if the lost, quote unquote, lost futures, Praerians, were to be given the same quantum wave torpedo rules as seen as in module C6, any miners that they field in the Omega might be somewhat ahead of the curve, even before one takes the supposed quantum wave mines into account. Which I agree. Now, you also mentioned about the soldier may not necessarily be granted the use of dark matter mines. Were they perhaps assigned some sort of minesweeper variants in order to help them attack fortified planets? I'm not sure if a soldier would even want to have mines. That's one thing that would, I'd have to review the history and get a better feel for the soldier. At the moment, I don't see them using mines because they seem more of a attacking kind of empire. Also, a more pressing issue would be for the organics. Well, it's impossible for either the Orlando or Brantinons to deploy minefields on their own. So any mine warfare mission variants they were to deploy would be intended for use as minesweepers. Agreed. Now the question would be strange idea for the Landa, which is having since these are basically organic ships, you know, would you actually want to put them in harm's way that much to do minesweeping? You know, I would think they're in my mind, their approach might be a little bit different than other non-organic empire. Of course, and one thing that he does mention is that the Brontodons were destroyed as a faction prior to the Andromeda invasion, which means they might not even had created minefield or mine sweeper or mine layer variants, just because of they never got to that point in their technology where they went, you know, we need to set up a minefield to protect ourselves. Of course, if you really think about it, here's the crazy thing. And I know that most part we deal with a 2D model of the universe when it comes to Starfleet battles. Now, here's always the gotcha to me, because we're talking about strategic. We're not talking about tactical. We're talking about strategic, because tactical in the way you can actually kind of imagine that these things that are basically, they're going to be 3D objects, you know, in quote-unquote real life. So I think you could probably take some liberties in the tactical model that, okay, you set up this web hex. Now, this web hex, you can't go around. Well, in theory, if it's 3D, you should be able to go around. You should be able to go down, over, or under. Now, the big question, obviously, for something like a web hex is how high is one of these, basically these walls, these Tholian walls, you know, how tall would it be? Obviously, it had to be tall enough to make it inadvisable to actually try to go under, try to go over. Or if you want to think about it that way, you could say, okay, well, what normally is considered slowing down, when you run into a web hex, the slowing down is almost like going over or going under. You know, it's kind of taken into consideration in that case too, because of, you know, it's going to slow you down. Well, to get around it, you have to go pretty far down or pretty far up, and therefore it's going to slow you down that much. And if you're going too fast, you won't be able to avoid it by going up or going down, you know, fast enough, you know. So that's easily seen on the tactical stage. But here's the thing. When it comes to the strategic stage, how high would a quote-unquote mind wall need to be so that it would be disadvantage to try to go around it? It would have to be pretty darn high, you know, other than to slow you down, you know. Now, I'm sure that Steve Cole's possibly thought about this, and someone's actually questioned him about this. Because, you know, again, they might be just because if they try to slow down too much, you know, obviously they're going to be same issue occurs, as I just described with the web. And that's the only reason why you set up these minefields in a strategic fashion. In a tactical fashion, obviously, when you're fighting something, what we pay for when it comes to mines for like surrounding a base, we can, in theory, just kind of change the plane to say, well, yeah, the minefield actually is a globe that surrounds the base. It's not just on a single plane, like the rings of Saturn. So, yeah, so in that case, you know, that's how mines would probably work. So, well, let's move on to the next topic. The next topic actually was going to be shapeways. Because the one thing I wanted to talk about shapeways is something, well, there's a couple things, a couple ideas that I had bouncing around my head about shapeways, and I figured I'd bring up as a topic for tonight. One of the things, obviously, is that one of the most important questions I think that needs to be answered. Now, Steve Cole doesn't answer to me. So, obviously, he's not going to do anything that's not in his own best interest that's actually going to make him money, at least long term. Obviously, you can take a short term loss for a long term gain. The question is how long is your short term? Don't know. But here's the question, which is Shapeways basically the next way of keeping the gears grinding, the motor running of ADB? You know, because obviously they're still going to be selling various rules, various copies of games. You know, whether it's going to be GURPS, or SAP or FedCom, or maybe Starmada, because Lord knows the Starmada rules, and having the Star, basically the Star Trek universe, quote unquote, to be available for that is quite nice, because of now you've got kind of an official rule set, this is Star Trek. So, you know, so that's going to sell too. But the question is Shapeways the future overall? You know, for, you know, that is that how AB is going to make the money? Obviously, as Steve Cole mentioned himself, is that he wants to make it so that the sculptors get money, you know, maybe enough money to go out for a nice date, you know, to a movie or something like that, you know, at the very least, you know, each month, you know, for all the work that they do. But, you know, and obviously, because it's ADB's property, they take a cut of that too. But is that going to be the way that they're moving forward when it comes to, I'm not saying that they're going to stop doing any development on other things like the Module X2, like Zerkalians, or one of those things, because obviously Steve Patrick is still working on the Master Starship books, which I'm assuming, given that Steve Patrick is working on that and not working on updating the SAB modules at the moment, that currently, obviously, it's the priority. And given that it seems to be the priority, if it is the priority, then obviously I would have to assume that that's what's making the money. And, you know, so obviously there's other products out there that's making them money. So, I'm not saying Shapeways would be their only income, because I think that'd be kind of crazy. Who was it? Oh, yeah. I was thinking about some of the suppliers for Apple. And there are certain suppliers, like, I forget what it was. I think it was for the graphics. Yeah, it was the graphics for, like, the iPhone. And the crazy thing is, Apple said, you know, gave them a heads up that in 2 years, they plan on no longer using their products, or at least scaling back on their products. And that basically caused the company basically to fail. You know, they're up for sale because they mentioned it. You know, because, and why is that? That's because of that one graphics design company. I think it's like 90% of the business is from Apple. So basically, Apple kind of owns them, which is a bad thing. Because their income comes from, basically, most of their income comes from a single source. That means that if that source dries up, they're dead. Plain and simple. So, you know, obviously, Steve Cole wants to have the income from a diversity of products, from role-playing games to actual board games. You know, so from the older SFB to the newer FedCom, to even the Stormata and, ACTA SF. I always forget what that stands for. Okay, well, give me a sec, because this drives me crazy. So, let's give me one. And I'm surprised at the... there it is. A Call to Arms. Starfleet, that's what that is. That's what it stands for. I know that they're working on A Call to Arms Starfleet Book 2.0. Currently, they have the 1.2 Deluxe Edition up for sale right now on the order page. And which is like $30, and you just that's for the 1.2 deluxe edition. So, I know they actually announced that they're going to be working on they want to get a 2.0 edition released this year. And of course, they have some of the older games like the Starfleet Battle Force. They still got some of the playtest packs. And Lord knows, that's just one of those products that I really, really wish that they would be able to redo. The problem is, I think they just have too many cards. They have too much inventory. And of course, then there is Starfleet Marines, which I like Starfleet Marines. Haven't got to play it nearly as much as I wanted to. I've played it as a demo for a few people, which actually is kind of cool. But, you know, I want to be able to play it online and so forth. Now, obviously, it's not selling enough, because I haven't heard anything about additional products. Because, obviously, to me, one of the products, assuming that Starfleet Marines sold enough, one of the products that ADB actually could come out with is just, as I think I mentioned this last week, something simple. New maps. That's all. That's all they have to do is produce new maps. To me, that is just something ripe to as a module onto Starfleet Marines. You know, just do one map at a time, because it looks like a Last Stand map costs $14. Now, obviously, here's always the difficult problem about maps. That's because they're a physical thing. Unlike, well, even the Starfleet battles and all these cabin slogs and so forth, they're physical. But the thing is, for those, you don't have to have the huge cost involved in those, because of you can print out the covers relatively cheap, and you can have lots of those in stock. But with the problem, you know, so you have you have a tiny outlay compared to the actual outlay for the actual rules themselves, the internals to any of these rule books, you know, or captain's logs, you know, and then they can just print those things on the actual rules, the white pages on demand. So it's the amount of actual investment is smaller compared to a map, where maps are expensive as heck because of their physical. And if you don't sell enough, you've got a lot of physical maps sitting in your warehouse collecting dust. And there's this money just going down the tubes. So I can see why they don't want to invest in maps, because a lot of there's cheaper versions. Obviously, if they really wanted to, they could do black and white maps, but how many of you guys are going to buy black and white maps? Not that many people. So that is what it is. So given that, and Shapeways, since Shapeways is itself a on-demand retailer, basically, they create the miniatures on demand. They 3D print them out. So when you order it, they can 3D print it out, and then boom, hey, it's available. Until that time, there is no inventory. Possibly. I'm not sure how they work that. If they actually print out a few copies, or they wait for the order itself. I'm willing to bet that they wait for the order itself before they print out any copies, because they have too many models, miniatures, and so forth available on the website to actually have even two copies of each of the miniatures or each of the little things, junchies, on the website, and all of the different materials for that. That's a lot of money, which is just going to be sitting around, which is why, you know, the whole idea of 3D printing miniatures, basically having them on demand, is a heck of a lot cheaper. And overall, when it comes to, if you're ordering a lot of them, it's going to be a lot more expensive. So the price per miniature is higher, more expensive than like 1,000 of the same kind. But at the same time, there's less overhead, less outlay for that, you know, when you actually print on demand. Now, one of the things about Shapeways that I was thinking about, which is, of course, we have the miniatures, and obviously they have shown that they can do some other things other than miniatures that are Starfleet universe related. Some of the things, actually, I was actually thinking of some other crazy ideas. Obviously, if you've been keeping track on the discussion board, there actually one person was talking about, let me just see if I can find it. They were talking about SFB chess. Now, there is Starfleet Battles chess set. Let me see. When they got posted on November 2004. Now, this is long gone, far away, before Shapeways existed. But it looks like it's the whole thing is being brought up again. Yeah, here it is. The big issue with this type of set is making them heavy enough to stay put and surviving the constant handling. Using 3D prints to make the masters and then casting the sets may be more effective, especially with 16 pawns. Now, casting a machine based than making 3D prints of small ships to top them off may be an option, which makes sense to me. Right. The whole idea of having a Starfleet Battles chess set from something from Shapeways is a great idea. And actually, I like Steve's idea where you can maybe buy the base from someplace else which just sells bases. You know, I mean, nice bases, nicer than what currently is available on Shapeways. And then have smaller ships on top of those. I'm not sure if you want ships, because the biggest issue, obviously, with chess sets is that it's not the, you don't want them to be too wide. Because, what was it? It's been a while. I think there was a Star Trek chess set, which obviously part of, it has a different ships. But those ships were metal castings. I could tell they were metal castings, so that you can move these things around. And obviously, the great thing about metal castings is that it's made out of metal. But more importantly, it's got the weight. Because that's one thing. If to do an SFB chess set, if you've ever seen chess pieces, most of them are really tall versus being wide. Now, obviously, this might mean that you need a bigger chessboard, so that you don't have to have the miniatures too small. Because if you have the miniatures too small, you're going to lose detail, even with some of the higher resolution pieces. And the question is, as was pointed out, there are 16 pawns. Now, given that there's just 16 pawns, that means there's a total of 32 pieces. Yeah, 32 pieces. So 32 pieces is not something that is cheap to print out. So obviously, if you want to try buy the whole chess at one time, you're in trouble. Now, there's also the possibility of starting small and then just grow, i.e., build, almost treat it as the toy in a box of cereal. In that to get the toy, you have to buy the box of cereal. So, how often do you buy a box of cereal? Well, parents don't want to buy it all the time, just because invariably there's too much sugar in cereal. But anyway, the whole idea is to build up a collection. It's almost let's the quarters. How they had the celebration. Based on the quarters, each state have their own quarter. So you would collect each one maybe every month or whatever until you had them all. And you could do the same thing for a SFB chess set. You could buy them a piece at a time. Or, a few pieces at a time. But it'll take you a little bit of time to make it all up because of just the expense Android chess set. That'd be kind of cool. On a granite board. Oh, that'd be awesome. That actually would be kind of cool. Which is a whole idea of taking rock, stone, and then shaping it. Right. I was thinking, that's the kind of thing I was thinking of. MG was mentioning to save space on the board, you could have ships vertically combined with obelisk shape, type shape. Yeah, okay, thank you, Dave. Dave mentioned that Franklin Mint proudly presents an SFB chess set. Like I said, one of the Franklin Mint has a Star Trek. I think are they the one who sold the Star Trek chess set? That was something like that. But anyway, yeah, MG, that's exactly what I was thinking about, which is because most chess pieces are taller than they are wide, i.e., you have ships. Well, you can have ships vertically is one way of solving the issue. The other possibility is instead of using ships, use some other shape to have it. Obviously, some of them would actually have to be ships. But things like, what would be a good pawn? I'm thinking of something that's pawnish. Because I would think that you could have like the rooks as, you know, represented by star bases. Stirrers as pawns. Yeah, stirrers or frigates would definitely be a good representation of a pawn. But I'm just wondering if there's something other than a ship that could actually represent an SFB chess piece. There's a good idea. Thank you, MG. MG was pointing out you could actually have simple shapes, but just have fleet markers embossed on them. You know, for, let's just say, now here, is, which is, have like a pawn-like piece, but have like, oh, the Federation, symbol for the Federation on it. And then and have them in white, and have the ones in black, have those, have the Klingons, the Klingon symbol on them. Or even, you know, make them two pieces kind of idea, which is that you have the pawns where round, but they have these flat pieces where then you can mount whatever kind of fleet marker that you want to, you actually want to attach to that piece. Oh, MJ was mentioning that he made a couple 1-inch ones for possible F&E use on a large map. And Dave's just mentioning that my idea is not quite as cool as having ships. I agree. But having ships vertically is kind of weird. But see, the beauty of having other pieces that can be mass-produced is good to a certain degree. Obviously, the great thing about Shapeways is that you can generate them on demand. You know, so if you could actually, in that case, that's why you want to actually print out your chess pieces from Shapeways. At least AB would like to have that. Obviously, we wouldn't like that because it costs more. But you can get really good quality if you can mass produce these. Now, the problem is obviously the amount of investment required. That's always the difficult part. So, but there's other things that you can do. That's just one point of things that you actually can do when it comes to Shapeways. Is that they don't have to just be ships. They can be, as I said, chess pieces is one thing. You can have, as MG did with for F&E, is these fleet markers, basically. Which, come on, how many F&E players would love to have some nice fleet markers? You know, I think those would be fantastic. Especially for those larger maps, which that's what MG mentioned that he, yeah, you always can print them on solid in gold, yes. But you have these wonderful shapes for these markers, which I think would be fantastic. Or if you want to, make necklace, not the necklaces themselves, but like little emblems that you can actually attach to a necklace, you know, and do it that way. So people can, you know, either that or have it so that you can make like a pin that you can print out that has this wonderful shape, you know, this, either a fleet or a symbol of the empire that you want to represent, you know, kind of do the whole, what I did when I was younger, which was I collected buttons, is what I did. All kinds of crazy buttons. But they had all kinds of things that, not the buttons that you put on, you know, attached to a shirt. Meaning, you know, you button up your shirt, those kind of buttons. Buttons as in, have little logos or sayings, or like one of the ones obviously was the Orioles. I had that one. I had different little goofy little sayings that that these buttons had. And I actually, at one point, I had a cap, it really was a cap, where I attached a lot of these to, and actually I would wear it. Say really it's a little jingly when I put it on my head. So, but those are the kind of things that you could easily do. You know, I think it'd be a fantastic idea for Shapeways. Now, what I was going to talk about for. MG also, you can come up with something that could be given away as a tournament prize. Ooh, that would be kind of cool. I would think especially something that ADB could come up with for the Platinum Hat tournament. You know, in addition to, you know, you winning this and you get some prize, a prize money, quote-unquote money, it's basically for spending on at ADB, which is fine with me. But you could have this special button that you would be printed out by ADB. You know, they're the only people who actually could submit those. Possibly. I gotta see if that's possible for Shapeways. MG, you know if they can do custom printings for 3Ds? Obviously, you know, ADB already has all the information about what's needed to print something out from Shapeways, but I was wondering if they would do private orders. I'm not gonna say small batches. I don't think they always deal with small batches, so you know, big surprise there. But anyhow, so I think you know, that'd be kind of cool. So I'm gonna move on. Okay. I'm just not sure about if they could actually do small orders like that. And understood. Well, the next thing I wanted to talk about actually was future games. Whether it is something that I created, I'm thinking about more along the lines of what ADB would do. Obviously, some of these that I'm thinking of would require that people be interested in them. And that's, well, it's the case of any game. You know, ADB is more than happy to trade games for money. You know, and that's what they like to do. That's how it keeps them in business. So, one of the things I was thinking of was that, you know, I like Starfleet Marines, and currently they deal with squads. So they're dealing at the squad level on these maps. Now, obviously, one thing you could do is you can increase the size, the scale, from these squads to be like brigades, regiments, things like that, to be a little larger. Now, as me and Barry discussed last week, one of the things that obviously is a concern is one thing we do not know, which is how big of a actual landing force, you know, Marines, whether they're humans or Gorns or Hydrants or whatever, would you actually land on a planet? So, that's one thing that the only reason I bring that up is because that comes up with a question of the viability. Is it realistic to create something at the more larger scale, the more strategic scale, when it comes to being on a planet? You know, not quite abstracting it as far as like Module M was, where you had. These different points, you have the different, like this for a normal M class planet, you have the 6 hex sides, and each side, you could actually have these defense points that you actually, you know, these bases and so forth that you actually could designate and then say, okay, well, you've got so many regular army units, and then you have to do, you roll these dice to be able to attack and defend and all that kind of thing, and then you could have moved the units to a remote area, so then it'd be hard for the defending force to attack. You know, I'm not saying abstract it out that far, but I'm thinking about abstracting it out, basically moving closer, you know, more to the strategic level than it currently is for Starfleet Marines. Now, who would be interested in that? I would be, but as I mentioned before, the question would be, what is that realistic when it comes to Star Trek? Because of one of the things that they can do is obviously because of you're invading a planet, you can actually just go and blow. You can blow up a whole brigade easily, or a whole army. You could destroy it if they're gathered in a small enough space. Brings up the question is, do you concentrate your forces to the degree that, you know, you actually have brigades and so forth? And I'm not sure. But, you know, which is why I'd like to have it, but I'm not sure it's actually viable when it comes to that regard. I'm not saying whether it's viable as a game product, as an actual game, because I'm not sure, personally, I'm not sure that would be viable as a game currently, because I'm not sure how many copies of Starfleet Marines that ADB actually has sold so far. So that's kind of critical. Now, the thing is, you know, the other games that ADB can come up with, you know, now obviously they're working on GURPS, they're working on different. Special ops game. Well, actually, I can see actually MG special ops being almost like a unit within Starfleet Marines, where actually you could send in this special ops unit into the like a city, and then you have squads, you know. Positioned all over the city, you send a special ops unit so to penetrate the city, and then one of the things that might just be rules, you know, for a scenario, but I would hope that you could actually have special ops as a unit type for Starfleet Marines, where they could go into the city, and then what you do is play the hide and seek game, you know, that. You know, like the enemy units, you know, enemy squadrons knows that there's a special ops unit around in this city, or around, you know, this part, this town or whatever. They know it's there. They just don't know where it is, you know. And then the special ops unit would actually have the ability to hide, and obviously when they attack, they'd be more known. You know, and of course, every time they attacked, there was a possibility they'd be found out or captured or along those lines. So that I can see as being a unit for Starfleet Marines. Now, when it comes to other games that ADB come up with, is I would love them to redo Starfleet Battle Force to be more generic in nature when it comes to, or have it more like a deck building game. I'm not sure how you could do that. Because I think actually I worked on some kind of a deck building game using the Starfleet Battle Force cards. The whole idea of, I always like the idea of reusing the play material that you have. They might not represent exactly the same thing, but you can use them as game components to create a new game, which is one thing I think that if you could do for certain things when it comes to what ADB currently has, especially when it comes to Starfleet Battleforce, all these decks, to open them up, tear them apart, and create a whole new game based on these game components. I think that would be a fantastic idea, because in theory, all you'd have to do, if you could keep the same deck, or maybe say, okay, well, you get two decks. Then you put those two decks and you combine them. If you can then redefine what those cards mean, you can create a new game without costing you anything more, because you already got all these copies of the game already in the warehouse. Now, obviously, the tough part is that if you create a new game using these old game components, if you ever run out of any copies of the old game, you're screwed. You know? Not sure what you do then. Obviously, having another tactical board game is, it's kind of crazy. I think ADB has pretty much covered it, though. I know they want to work on more of a strategic level game, more of a what do they call it? I think it was more of a I was gonna say train on rails, but that does not make sense. But more of a logistics kind of game, where you have these planets, and then the whole idea is you're managing a logistics network and trying to protect it from, you know, the pirates and marauding enemy units and things like that. You know, what do you do? You know. Actually, the funny part is the more I think about that, the more I look at that and go, you know, that sounds like Star Wars, because of the whole issue with Star Wars is the faster the hyperspace, and you're traveling in hyperspace, and you always have a time delay to get to have your fleets respond to get to a certain planet, because it's not instantaneous. It's not like going through a wormhole and all of a sudden you can get to another planet. No, you have to say, "Oh, we're gonna be traveling to here." And you do that through hyperspace, and then you have the whole idea is that if someone knows that you're coming, they're going to leave. And they're going to escape. And the whole idea is a whole guessing game. What was it? I know there was actually a board game where it was embodied, that whole idea for Star Wars. And I think they mentioned on Three Moves Ahead, which was kind of a, I heard it, it's like kind of a cool game. I like the pretext of it being a guessing game. You know, yes, you can set up a rebel base here, and you may never be found. But the whole idea is have to keep them off balance, keep the umpire guessing where it's located. And say, oh, it's over here, and then while they're guessing, then you can move the rebel base to another location so that they don't know where, you know, even if they find the previous location, they're still guessing to see what the new location is. So, you know, things like that. That's why I kind of like Star Wars in that regard when it comes to dealing with strategic level movement. You know, Star Trek is kind of like that too, though there's still too many, in my mind, you know, hand wave them kind of stuff going on. I'm not saying Star Wars doesn't have some of the hand wave them stuff when it comes to some of the tech. So, obviously. I was going to say, you know, obviously online games are a good thing. Tough part is actually getting people interested in those kind of games. But I think more and more these days, you have to almost go web-based to a certain degree, at least have that as an option. Because as I mentioned before, mentioned last month, I think, when I was doing my goals for the year, which is one of the things that I definitely have noticed is that, obviously, that it's getting harder and harder to actually install applications onto machines without them going through, like, the Mac App Store and things like that. You know, but getting past the Mac App Store, getting through Apple is not an easy task, just because of they are really, especially because it's kind of Star Trek kind of licensing, and Lord knows, trying to convince them that yes, I do have a license. Well, actually, I'm licensing it from somebody else. I'm paying a license fee to somebody else, so it's like they want to see the actual thing, and I really can't show them an actual license agreement that says I have the rights to do this, this, and this. So, trust me, I do not. I am weary of the day when something happens to ADB. So, actually, I think with that, we're going to wrap up for this evening. I don't have any other ideas when it comes to future games to come off the top of my head. And also, I'm kind of tired tonight. But anyhow, so we'll close up with that. You know, I had a nice talk about Shapeways and some of the things that we can do in the future with Shapeways. Some quick things about mining. You know, went through a quick little piece from Gary Carney, which is nice about the mine layers, mine sweepers, and the Mega Octant. And, of course, some quick ideas about future games, both from mainly from A to B. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.